This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Jones, Jefferson, Kelderman, three. Oh, wow! Biggest lead for the Cyclones.
Tournament fever. You know, I did a mock draft today. Just wanted to put myself in a good mood on a sunny Friday. It's pretty hard to not get a good grade on these mock drafts online. It's pretty hard. They tell you, you know, here are a half a dozen or so reasonable options for you in this, as you are on the clock, as the Bills or anybody in these drafts. You sort of take whoever's at the top. You're getting a B at worst. Although I did get that F yesterday for one pick. I still can't explain it. Speaking of, well, the real draft, my friend Scott Barrett joins me today on the Wester Hotline. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off. Scott, how are you?
I'm good. What's up? What's up, Mike? Thanks for having me. What's up, Buffalo? Love Buffalo. Happy to be on.
My pleasure. We did talk earlier about some of the things we wanted to get into today, but I'm going to start with something that's not on that list and a trivia question for you, Scott, to put you on the spot. Who was on, as a guest, the School of Scott yesterday?
Was that you?
Yes, it was me. I gave you an easy one. Yes.
Yeah.
I was on with Theo, who's coming over, eh?
Yeah, hey, we haven't announced that, so you're breaking news right now.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Free agent, no worries. Free agent signing of the offseason by far, best one.
Theo Greminger. So, yeah, I had a nice time with him on that podcast yesterday. He's been on with us a lot. So, Scott,
he's the man.
He is the man. And when I went to Long Island to watch my son play lacrosse a couple of summers ago, he showed up with bagels.
Oh,
I mean,
he's the best.
What a guy. All right. So let's get into some of these draft prospects here. We're a little bit more than a month out. And who better to start with than Travis Hunter? So what do you think happens here with Hunter, Scott, and what should happen? Like, should a team be ready if they're going to draft him as early as, like, the top five? That seems maybe likely that happens. Would you think he should play both ways full-time right away? Like, is he good enough, do you think, to be great at both?
Listen, the guy won the Heisman Trophy last year. He won the Biletnikoff Award, best wide receiver in the nation. He won the Bednarik Award, best defensive player in the nation. That's an unprecedented trifecta that will never be repeated again. Basically, he was the best and second best players in college football last year, best player on both sides of the ball. And yeah, I think he's the best player in this draft. I think he's worthy of the 101 pick, even in this day and age of just quarterbacks are so impactful, so important, so valuable. I don't think it's the best quarterback class. And I think this guy is just an absolute freak of nature. And so when you have someone doing the impossible, there's no limit to his upside. There's no limit. You can't put a cap on his potential. And so I think he could do it all. I think he could be the NFL's Shohei Ohtani. I know that's a hot take, but it's just looking at what he's done. He's just defied all the odds. So I don't want to say he can't do that. And I think in a worst-case scenario, he's either going to be an elite cornerback or an elite wide receiver for you. And so, I love him from a real NFL standpoint, from from a fantasy standpoint, it's a little trickier because maybe the NFL team drafting him doesn't feel the same way I do. And it's like, you know, it's much easier to be a full-time cornerback working in on key packages as a wide receiver than the reverse of that. So like most likely scenario is probably a cornerback who gets like 10 to 15 routes at most per game. And you're not going to move the needle for fantasy if you do that. But this is my favorite player in the draft. I think the second he steps on an NFL field, he's going to be my favorite player in the league. I love me some Travis Hunter.
Well said. I guess you do. I love the idea. We're you know, it's a good life. We're down here at pick 30 every year around there for the Bills, and you know, we can't play around with the idea of a guy like this. But so much content. Whatever market gets him, we have a fun time, a field day talking about him. Do you have a team that you think is the right fit? I've heard how like Vrabel in New England might make sense because like he actually did play both ways himself as a player. You've said he's worthy of the 101 Hunter. Do you have a team you think where he might be best?
I think Patriots are a really good one, but honestly, I think he can go anywhere. You look at Titans wide receivers and cornerbacks. You look at Giants wide receivers and cornerbacks, the Browns, they said they like him as a wide receiver. I really think he's plug and play just about anywhere. Like even if one of these teams, let's say the Patriots draft him and they're like, no, we view him as a cornerback. It's like, you know, stack him up against Javon Baker and Jalen Polk. Like, I don't know how he's not a two-way player just because he's the second he gets there, he's your best wide receiver.
Love it.
And you're a great cornerback.
Love it. Scott Barrett, my guest. So he'll be the first receiver drafted because he'll, you know, whether you call him a receiver or athlete, I've seen wide receiver, corner. Next probably is Tet McMillan. Is it too much to consider him to say he's controversial, Scott? Like, didn't run at the combine, had the pro day where people were, you know, kind of a few different places on his time. Almost everywhere after Hunter, he's the first receiver I see go. But you had Golden, who ran faster, and a couple of other guys, some often mocked in the first round. Where are you at on McMillan?
He's controversial, but it's so stupid that he is. He's just far and away the best wide receiver in this draft. I mean, it gets complicated with Hunter. Let's just remove him from the equation. But outside of that, McMillan, I think, is worthy of a top 10 overall pick. I don't think there's another wide receiver, again, you know, minus Travis Hunter, coming anywhere remotely close to him. I don't have Matthew Golden as a round one caliber talent. Yeah, he has the speed, although, like, my conspiracy theory is he botched that 40 time because, you know, you look at his face after that run. He was more shocked than anyone else. And, you know, people are doing this, like, frame tracking, and it kind of looks like it was actually more of, like, a 4.39 than what it actually was. But, like, the thing is, it doesn't even matter. Like, I've written tens of thousands of words on this. Ryan Heath did that for us this offseason. Athleticism is just about basically perfectly irrelevant for the wide receiver position. It's a position where, you know, certain intangibles like route running prowess just matter so much more. If you look at like all round two wide receivers drafted the past 12 years, the slower you are, the shorter you can jump, the better you're going to be from an NFL. So like it's negatively correlated, negatively predictive. And then you look at the top 30 fastest wide receivers since 2000 to participate at the combine. Only one of those has ever had a 1,000-yard season in the NFL. That was Santana Moss. And otherwise, it's just littered with the most overdrafted players, the biggest busts. And so, like, I literally did not care what he ran. And I thought it was a good time. You know, weight-adjusted, height-adjusted. That was a fine time. But outside of that, just you know, love him, you know, freakishly productive, hyper efficient. You know, you're talking about from a dynasty perspective for fantasy, it's just like this running back class is so stacked. I love the tight ends is like the only wide receiver. Like I might go just about all my drafts with either zero or one wide receivers. And that one wide receiver would be Tet McMillan.
Interesting. Yeah, that's kind of how you want to do it, right? To stay on fantasy for a minute is just load up on running backs, and this looks like kind of the perfect year for that.
Yeah, you can just take a shotgun blast approach with these running backs, and you're not going to miss. They're just they're just too good. Our film expert, Brett Weisfield, who has like the most insane hit rate, I think, of anyone working in this space from a film perspective, he said he had Jonathan Brooks, I think, as his RB1 last year, and he has 9 running backs with a film grade higher than Brooks last year.
Wow. Yeah, pretty good. Before we get to running backs, I want to ask you about 2 specific receivers here still. One is, and I saw you and Brett talking about him recently, Elik Iomanner from Stanford. I see the Bills, Scott, as late second. They have 2 late second round picks. They have no thirds, but 3, you know, they've got a lot of Saturday picks too. This guy's interesting to me, and your analysis with Brett is part of the reason, I admit. I wonder where he goes. Like, he's probably not a first-round pick, although maybe you think there's some chance of that.
Brett thinks so, and, you know, Brett's track record, again, is insane. Like, he'll go out on an island, and they'll say, no, this guy should go round one. And, you know, he's like a mid-second. Nope, lo and behold, some team takes a chance on him. And that's Brett's wide receiver two. Like, it's tight between his wide receiver 2 and wide receiver 5. It's, again, not a great class. And Ted, far and away, wide receiver 1. Again, removing Travis Hunter from the equation. But, like, I was expecting to go into this show debating him on it because it was such a controversial take. But, you know, the more I dug into Iomanner, the more I liked. And, like, the more I dug into everyone else, the more I disliked. So, like, I wasn't mad at his wide receiver 2 overall ranking at all. You know, his offense didn't do him any favors. His quarterback didn't do him any favors. His offensive coordinator didn't do him any favors. And when you factor that in, like, historically low catchable target rate, you factor in, you know, all of his production coming from out wide with no screens. What he did was pretty astounding. And so, I wanted to hate on it because, I love my debates with Brett, but I wasn't mad at that at all. And you know, according to Brett, the film was excellent, and there's so much more upside beyond that because he only played 1 full game of football from his junior, senior high school seasons and first season at college at Stanford. And, you know, he also, like, was Canadian, and he had to move to an American high school. And so he's a bit raw. There's untapped potential. He's a track star. And so, yeah, I like his upside. He's already winning routes, can separate. So, to me, like a plus version of Keon Coleman is who I'd say he'd be.
Okay. Speaking of Canadians who moved to the States to finish their high school careers, Josh Palmer is on that probably relatively short list. I know he's not a rookie here, but he's the Bills' biggest offensive signing, if not biggest signing, so far this month. Where are you at on Palmer? I know the separation score that I've seen at Fantasy Points likes him.
That's right. We have our custom stat ass average separation score, and he's been an ass guy for us for a number of years where, like, you know, people will come at us for it because, like, I'll post the top 15, and it's like, oh, okay, this makes sense. You know, Puka Nacua, CeeDee Lamb, A.J. Brown. Yeah, this all makes sense. And then you'll see Josh Palmer's name there. And they're like, yeah, what happened with it? And it's just like, hey, this is what our numbers are saying. Like, he can separate. He can beat man coverage. And that is so desperately what Buffalo needed. They did not have good separators. That was my concern with Keon Coleman. He was not separating last year. Khalil Shakir can do that, but a lot of that's, you know, we don't really give him too much credit for just, you know, finding the soft spot in zone, but just actually beating a quarterback 1v1. And so he doesn't have gaudy production or anything like that, but he does have the one thing that this offense was desperately lacking. And this is my argument for Josh Allen for part of my argument for Josh Allen for MVP over Lamar Jackson. And, like, this blew up on Twitter. It was, you look at cumulative team ass, you know, Buffalo is bottom 5, Baltimore far and away number 1. And so, you know, he just did not have the receiving talent that Lamar had. I mean, no, like, Zay Flowers and company, you know, they're not, like, brand names, but, like, they're great separators. Rashad Bateman, you know, really good against man and zone. And Buffalo just didn't have that, and I think that's a key piece that they needed. And I don't expect any of these wide receivers to put up gaudy numbers, but just in terms of, like, a team standpoint, I think this is what you were lacking. And you're going to see the benefit from that this season.
Well, I'd enjoy at some point this offseason, Scott, talking to you just about the Bills and the Bills offense, because I was confounded last year by how it went. I mean, they set a franchise record in points. Allen wins the MVP with like his lowest ever average depth of target or air yards, and like, so there were so many contradictory things happening. Here's Cook, where a lot of his numbers were not better than the year before, but he went from 2 rushing touchdowns to 16 last year. Like, just craziness. There's some reason, I think, to believe that maybe the Bills are headed for some contract difficulty with Cook.
Oh, yeah, let's draft some running backs. What Cook is asking for is like double what I think he is worth. So, yeah, let's draft some running backs, Buffalo.
Well, you've got Davis here, who was okay, fine as a rookie, Ty Johnson. But, man, in this draft, Scott, right, by the time you get to Saturday, if not Friday night in rounds 2 and 3, there should still be a lot to like.
Oh, yeah. Day 3 is still going to be stacked. And, again, shotgun blast to the running back approach. It is, you know, just throw a dart and you're not going to miss. These guys are too good. This class is too deep. The way I've been describing it is like, it's like a typical draft class for the running back position, but multiplied by 2.5 in terms of like top end talent, in terms of depth. And you have like, you know, your own, like whatever you're looking for. If you're looking for a big bruiser, this class has it. If you're looking for like a scat back plus, this class has it. If, you know, a potential bell cow, this class has it. So, yeah, I'd highly recommend Buffalo, and I'm sure they will. I think a lot of teams that even are set at the position, you know, this class is too good, and, you know, rather than draft for need, just, you know, best player available, you're going to see some teams have, like, a really good RB1, a really good RB2, and even a pretty good RB3.
I've been waiting for teams to do that. You know, I know every year is different in terms of the talent in the draft, but to go into Saturday and pick a running back and then just, like, sort of count on that player, you know, at least competing for a starting job or even being the starter, it hasn't really happened. I mean, last year we had veterans around the league get signed, and a lot of them stayed healthy and did great. Bucky Irving was somebody who was a Saturday pick, and eventually just, I think he was undeniable, you know, and people point to the draft capital and be like, as a fantasy player, well, I mean, what can you really expect? I want the league to get to a point where Saturday running backs, it would be right to expect the team that drafted them to like use them. And maybe this is the year for that, given the depth of talent.
Yeah, and you know, part of that is because the NFL became woke to positional value, but it's also like swung the other way. You know, like we're kind of living in the post spread era, and there was like a major running back resurgence where, you know, Saquon Barkley got paid and he just got paid again and had this insane year, and Derrick Henry was right behind him, and, you know, running the ball is becoming more important, more valuable in today's post-spread era, and, you know, teams are kind of cognizant of that.
Scott, before I let you go, Bishal Tooten is one of these running backs who I saw in a tweet of yours compares in a certain way, you know, right on the Bijan Robinson level. I mean, that was a top 10 overall pick and an elite prospect, but Tooten has kind of won me over as one of these backs that might be sneaky good.
Yeah, I don't want to go tooting my own horn here.
Here we go.
Sorry. But yeah, my model had him as I don't know, the fifth best running back in this class before the combine, when industry consensus was he was like a round 6 pick. But he leads the all power conference running backs, so you remove Ashton GP that way, in career missed tackles, force per touch, career yards after contact per attempt. Those are two of the best metrics we have. And then he has just absolutely freakish speed and athleticism. I have my own custom athleticism score, Spork, S-P-O-R-Q. The only running backs more athletic than him since 2000 to participate at the combine: Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Stewart, A.J. Dillon. So freak athlete, and he has those numbers. He also has like horrific fumbling issues and, you know, maybe a few other minor red flags, but I love him.
we could work around that. We could work around that. Very good. Well, you've covered a lot here, Scott. Please take this opportunity, if you'd like, to sort of pump up fantasy points. There's so much data there. It's good for, you know, uploading your dynasty teams and comparing with teams in your league, and just a lot of other uses.
Yeah, my articles are still a couple of weeks away. Gonna wait on Dane Brugler to give me verified birthdays, which is, you know, a crucial point in my model. But Brett Whitefield's draft guide based on his film study, that will drop either today or tomorrow. That should be free. So fantasypoints.com, be on the lookout for that. No one does it better than Brett. He said Puka Nacua. He comped Puka Nacua to Justin Jefferson a couple of years ago. I called him crazy. Lo and behold, look at what Puka's done. So insane hit rate for Brett. Check out that dropping today or tomorrow.
And are you still listening to every word of the post-draft news conferences?
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that.
that's your baby.
You got to get me on right afterwards. I'll have some good stuff for you.
I definitely will try. Thank you, Scott. Have a great weekend.
All right. See you, Mike.
Scott Barrett, CEO, Fantasy Points at Scott Barrett DFB. If you follow me on Twitter, I sent out a tweet an hour ago or so that Scott was going to be on today. He's one of my favorites because you heard it in the one section about speed at receiver. Anybody who sort of, it's contrarian, at least in terms of common sense, but can prove it. We've had these over the years. I love it when I think of an idea, whatever it is. Fourth downs was this. Now everybody knows. But 10 years ago for me, like, I was just fixated on how teams punt too much. And, okay, here's A, B, and C. Like, here's the proof. I'm not a mathematician, but here's why I think I can say it. Here's why I think I'm right. And, you know, that was one where it might have seemed counterintuitive. Like, you grow up and the game is played one way. And what is this? What is this madness? Going for two. When you're down 14 and you score a touchdown to make it 8, how you should go for two on that, which is like, what? You always have to explain that one. And I had to have it explained to me how if you're 50%, which is usually about what you are, to convert on a 2-point conversion, you know, you miss the first one, but you make the second one and you're right where you'd be if you made 2 extra points. You still have to make, by the way. They're not automatic. If you make the first one, then you're in a position to win the game with your next touchdown. And that reward makes that worth doing. So one of these that, like, I don't get it. Explain it to me. Okay, yeah. Long way to set it up. The list he mentioned when we talked about Aya Manor, the Stanford receiver, and I'm not sure that's how you say it, how the guys, or no, it was about McMillan, because we were talking about his time. The guys that run the fastest, like, suck. it's a whole list of John Ross, you know, and how the only, whatever that he said exactly, there was one guy out of 30 in X number of years that ran, like, the, whatever the combination of speed and something else was, Santana Moss, who was good. I don't know specifically what this is. I know Worthy is someone that, I mean, obviously he ran the fastest time ever, right? And he was skinny, so a little bit of an acquired taste. And he got there for Kansas City. He didn't have an incredible season right out of the box. He wasn't Neighbors. But, you know, he looks like he's going to be a good player. He is a good player for the Chiefs. Too soon to bring up Worthy. Remember talking to Scott last year about A.D. Mitchell. Brian Thomas, I think, was another one, and A.D. Mitchell, to be fair. But it was Scott Barrett who sort of, like, awakened me to, okay, this is his yards per route run, I think it was, is a red flag. And I don't know, like, Mitchell for Indianapolis did not have a good season, but there were some moments with him, and maybe he gets there. That's kind of what Coleman was, though, too, who was drafted much earlier, or at least earlier, than Mitchell. He's the one the Bills went with. And you had a what would you say? You had a few moments. I might want to talk about him some more today, Keon Coleman. Speaking of receivers here, like, what your level of confidence is that he gets there. Mine isn't great. But, again, somewhat deferring to Scott and other people that I talked to, was not really excited about that idea last year. A couple guys really were. Who was the one analyst we had, I got to remember, that loved Coleman? There was one guy last year that loved Coleman, but a lot of guys didn't. He was the 8th receiver picked. It wasn't like he was, you know, high first round, but he's important. And if the Bills draft a receiver like this guy from Stanford or someone else in that range, they might come in over the top of the entire depth chart, or at least ahead of Coleman. We'll see. Thanks again to Scott Barrett. Always a treat. Sal Capaccio after sports. The tournament rolls on. We've got Duke way ahead. Duke was minus 50,000 to win. That means a $500 bet on Duke today, before the game, to beat Mount St. Mary's would have paid you $1. You didn't see me make that take that gamble. They're up 51-24 in the first half. So whoever that person was that bet $500 on Duke to win one U.S. dollar, looking good. Sal after sports. Thanks for listening. Bulldog is off through next week. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.